Welcome back, Fiends to Handle with Scare, presented by the / Incast Podcast Network. Our show discusses horror movies and the phobias they emphasize. Throughout the month, we've been taking a closer look at hibernophobia and the dislike of Ireland and Irish people. Before I introduce tonight's film and my co-host, just a few general reminders for you guys. You can stay connected with us over on X at Handle with Scare, and be sure to join us for our Twisted Tuesday and Thursday watch parties, which are held every Tuesday and Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. And that, of course, is over at kick.com/totallydrunk. Now, with that being said, of course, as always, I am joined by my co-host, Grindhouse Zombie, and, Grindhouse, you know, it's been kind of like a sprint kind of week. This is our third recording for the week just to get caught up. A lot of happenings in recent weeks. And, you know, tonight's film, you know, we have a found footage film, which I feel like in regards to subgenres within horror, this one in particular is probably the most divisive out of, like, any other kind of horror movie, just because there are very few exceptions when it comes to, like, standouts. You know, you have, like, your staple ones, of course, but for the most part, you know, when it comes to found footage, this is a take-it-or-leave-it kind of subgenre. But tonight is very intriguing because we kind of have a mixture of two subgenres, because not only do we have found footage, but we are also tackling, you know, religious horror as well, which, you know, lines up perfectly with some of the recent releases that we have had in theaters.
You are absolutely right. This definitely is akin to something that I just saw recently in the theater. Little film called Immaculate. So we watched this for Twisted Tuesday, and I don't know what was going on with me, if I just was, you know, just life, and sometimes you can't pay that close of attention. So I watched this movie again today, and it kind of went down a weird rabbit hole of research on priests and nuns and demonic possession. The reality for this film is it's way better than I thought it was initially. And so a found footage movie from 1960. I mean, that's, if you don't like the filmography of, like, the 16 millimeter cameras, I mean, okay, that's fine. I can be okay with that. And there's definitely some blips and boops in the movie that happen. But overall, the story in this is both ambiguous and super solid at the same time. And it makes you think, and it makes you really try to understand what's happening at this place. Watching it again tonight, I have got a lot of respect for this movie. I really enjoyed it. And that generally doesn't happen to me. I generally don't come back and go, oh my God, you know, sort of like, what a masterpiece the second time around. But this film was really, really good. It really surprised me. I'm glad I watched it again. And I'm also glad that I did the research on it too, because the research, the dark rabbit hole I went down of it, call it what it is, Catholicism, and how they do things in the ranks and everything like that, honestly just made it better. So I'm excited to dive into this one and talk about it.
Absolutely. So here we have, in the fall of 1960, Father Thomas Riley and Father John Thornton were sent by the Vatican to investigate a miraculous event in an Irish home for fallen women, only to uncover something much more horrific. So as I mentioned, The Devil's Doorway, which is our film tonight, this is a found footage religious horror flick. The film is described as being the 16mm recordings of a pair of priests who were investigating a potential miracle at a Magdalene laundry in Ireland. Now here, you know, we do have some of our usual genre expectations. You know, we have a young and old priest team. We have some satanic possession going on. You know, we got the general spookiness of the Catholic Church, of course, which is a perfect backdrop for anyone who's been inside a church, especially when the lights are off. But anyways, what makes The Devil's Doorway different is just the fact that, you know, this is the rare religious horror flick that actively engages with the history of abuse when it comes to the Catholic Church. You know, without it, you know, the plot of this film wouldn't really happen. Now, that being said, you know, I feel like we kind of have to talk about, you know, the laundries in Ireland really quick, because, like, that is a major piece of the backdrop here. So these laundries were basically places where women were sent by their families or their communities. And, you know, these inmates, for the most part, were, you know, unwed mothers. They were girls who were deemed too pretty. You had, you know, sexual abuse survivors, sex workers, basically the intellectually disabled. And these inmates were basically just trapped at these government and church-controlled institutions. And you know, they were just subjected to just really harsh conditions and abuse of all kinds. And, you know, these places were work homes. You know, there were places where these girls would have to wash sheets, which, you know, in a way is kind of like symbolic, in a way that it's like a way for them to, like, wash their sins, so to speak. And for the most part, like, these women were working, like, longer hours than what you would see in, like, the factories, for example. Obviously, they weren't, you know, getting paid for their work either. And these were for-profit institutions as well. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, when we're talking about this, like, this is still fairly recent history on top of that, too, because I want to say, like, the last one had closed in, like, 1997. So, like, this isn't, like, dating back, like, you know, 100 plus years. And, like, it was one and done type ordeal. This was going on for quite some time.
Well, I mean, these Magdalena laundries, I mean, are the equivalent, like, here in the States, of what we would call a sanitarium. That's really what they were the equivalent of. Maybe a little less brutal in the fact that the people had tasks to do, and whether it was unpaid or paid labor, I don't want to discuss that because that's just not really relevant to what we're talking about. But it was the goal with these things was to give people a purpose. And the first purpose was to be closer to God. The second purpose was to, you know, further the causes of this institution. Now with the laundries and this, I mean, it really does have the reek of slave labor. That's really what it does have the reek of. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you talked about, you know, the last one closing in 1997. And I think here in the States, our last quote-unquote sanitarium was sometime in the 80s that it closed. And while I'm not going to argue how people were treated, because I think it's been pretty profoundly proven that people were treated bad, at the same time, these places closed, and then the people that were in them were turned out into the streets. And now we have what we have with our homeless populations, you know, and the people not, I don't really have a lot of sympathy for the people on the streets that are drug users. I think you've chosen a path and you can just walk it and honestly go fuck yourself. I don't care. But the people that have mental illnesses and the people that are not equipped, they're not mentally equipped to, like, be a part of society. I don't think they have anything else now. And while you can definitely argue that the treatment wasn't great, I think that you can also say that at least having a place to sleep and food to eat and whatever else might have been better than being on the street. So as a society, I'm not sure what we're going to do with that. But with this movie, I mean, I think they confront that head on. They just flat out say it. You know, and the Mother Superior does such a great job of laying out, well, what would you have me do? You know, I deal with both society's problems, but also the problems of the church. And that's maybe the most interesting thing about this is that, you know, there's a quote in here with some of the, you know, unwed mothers that how many of the fathers were fathers, mm-hmm. you know, and fathers with a capital F. And it's like, oh, well, okay. So, I mean, this is, this movie really has a lot going on for what it has to say about society and how we're trying to both clean up messes, but also, you know, keep people of a different sort of, we'll call it societal ladder rung, mm-hmm. you know, from slipping down one more and at least staying parallel and maybe in a perfect world trying to go up one. But then as the movie progresses, it turns into something else.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the history of these laundries is really interwoven with Ireland's abortion referendum. Now, this was like dating back to 2018 when basically the country was voting to repeal the constitutional amendment that made abortion illegal. And that date coincided with the world premiere of The Devil's Doorway, which took place at the Seattle International Film Festival. Now, I feel like it's also worth mentioning, too, here. We had Aislinn Clark as a director of this flick. She was the first female horror director in the Northern Ireland area. And this was also her directorial debut in regards to, like, you know, feature film. She had done a couple of short films before this. But I would say a very strong opening, to say the least. But the inspiration for this stems from a discovery which happened in 2017 when there was a mass grave at a former laundry basically dug up, which contained 800 child remains. And that helped basically inspire the plot of The Devil's Doorway. Man, that's just like a grim thing to really take in. So it really just shows you just like how brutal like some of these places were when it came to like, you know, just getting rid of these kids. And, you know, for the most part, I find the ideas of like having like the old and the young father in this case, and they kind of do kind of like a little bit of a role reversal in regards to their faith in this movie. The older father is the one who has his doubts about what's happening, you know, in this church, and whether he still believes. The younger father is more akin to like really wanting to buy into the fact that, you know, a miracle is taking place. He doesn't really have a question about it. And he's the one who is trying to document all of this, you know, on his 16mm camera.
The difference, I think, in the old priest and the young priest, like you said, is very stark. And especially when you have, you know, the older priest who is definitely, and he says it several times in the movie, where his faith is waning. Mm-hmm. Let's call it. And he's kind of, I mean, if you're honest about it, he's kind of like the rest of us in the world where we've been like doing a thing or doing a job for like how many years. And it's like, you've kind of started to lose your faith in it. And it's like, why am I doing this? And what am I trying to prove? Whereas the young priest is all just kind of, he's just all piss and vinegar. And he's like, we have these signs of demonic possession, you know, the speaking other languages and and just all these other things. But the older priest, Thomas, is just trying to do his job. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't want this younger guy's injections of his interpretation. That he's just like, well, what if it's this? What if it's this? And he's just like, be quiet. Let's just do our jobs. And so, like, that piece of it, I think, has nothing to do with religion or any of the things we're talking about. I think it's just a life thing where you've got somebody who's been around for a long time, is sort of worn out and wants to just kind of ride the magic carpet until the end. Whereas you have this younger guy who's like, I'm going to come in and I'm going to make my mark, you know, and it makes it really interesting. The filmography in this is interesting to me in that it is, parts of it are what I would call spectacular. And there's parts of it where they have these little frame jumps and, you know, and it, like, literally, and some of that, like, I get that you're trying to help us understand that it's a 16 millimeter camera and that we're actually filming on film. If I had one complaint about this movie, is that was used too often, the film thing, because every time it happened and the frame of film sort of tipped to the side, it was a little bit like, I just sort of had to close my eyes and wish I had an ibuprofen, because it was like, come on, what are you doing? But overall, you know, and now knowing that this was, you know, a director's debut, it honestly just makes this movie even better for me. This is probably one, having seen it twice now, all the way through, the second time, really paying attention, making notes, paying attention to pretty much every detail of it. It's not quite above reproach, but it's pretty close. And like I said, I sort of rabbit holed the whole religion in general, demonic possession, the who's who of the Catholic Church. It rabbit hole. You'd laugh if you saw it. You really would. But it was interesting that it told me some things. And probably the most interesting thing that it told me is that you have this Mother Superior who is kind of in charge over all these nuns. But by the church standards, a Mother Superior, and she's just the longest standing nun, basically, she's not clergy. Okay, she's not ordained in any way. She is literally a layperson. Now, yeah, she's made her vow and done all that, but she's not, when it comes to the order, she is not above a priest. And in this entire movie, you have her constantly butting heads with this priest and saying, you're not going to do this. You know, and he says, well, I'm going to go to the bishop. And it's like, you know, you're going to be surprised that he's not surprised. And it's like, it's kind of interesting slash, we'll go with interesting, that you have this person who, in this solitary place, and I mean, and if you think about what this place is, it's basically a garbage dump, right? That's what it is. And I mean, they stopped just short of saying it, but it's a garbage dump. But, you know, so she's the head of the garbage dump. And then when somebody else comes in and says, I'm going to check out your garbage dump, she's like, nope, that's not going to happen. And I'm not going to let it happen. And it becomes this sort of dueling banjo thing between the two of them. And it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, and of course, all of this is stemming from this investigation that is going on with Father Thomas Riley and Father John Thornton. And they're there because the statues of the Virgin Mary are weeping blood. So, you know, in this duo, of course, the elder is the one who's, like, doing a lot of the but like the hands-on like inspections in regards to like the statues, and we're basically just trying to figure out whether or not the crying of blood is a miracle or if it's just a sign of the horrors that are to come. And of course, you know, we couldn't have a movie if it wasn't the latter of which. So you have Father Thomas, who is just convinced early on that the weeping blood is a hoax, whereas, you know, Father John is more of the eager believer in this, and he's just looking to capture what he believes is a genuine miracle. And of course, what they end up encountering is a great deal of suspicious resistance from Mother Superior, as you had mentioned, as well as, you know, a little bit of an unholy conspiracy involving a girl who has been secreted away in the cellar. Which, you know, it's definitely, you know, we had like our kind of our chained moment, of course, which, you know, always draws a reaction from the Twisted Crew, to say the least. So while this is a home for, you know, fallen women, you know, that's mostly just code for, you know, pregnant, unmarried women. So this basically meant that, you know, children are being born and often, you know, remain here for quite some time, years even. Now, what's interesting about that is just the fact that, you know, we have these two priests arrive from the Vatican, and there are no children to be found anywhere. Not during the daytime, anyway. Of course, Father John can't seem to, like, really find any sort of peace during the night, because a lot of times he's hearing, like, children laughter, like, filling the halls of the church. And, you know, both priests look to search the place further. And, you know, turns out, you know, we do kind of have like a little cubby hole where, you know, some of the more mentally unstable women are being held. And once they find this place, this is really where, you know, the real story starts to take place. So the focus isn't just, you know, on whether or not there's a miracle happening at this institution. It's focusing more on the introduction of Kathleen, who is the woman who is chained to the wall in the cellar there.
I honestly think that one of the more, we'll call it, confusing bits of this movie is that as it goes on, the Mother Superior definitely lays claim to, you know, being part of, and this is a thing in Ireland, you know, the Catholic baby factory. Mm-hmm. And adopting out children, you know, from unwed mothers. And we have the unwanted children. We have the product of, you know, where the fathers of the father. But at the same time, excuse me, as they mix in this sort of possession piece of it, it feels like this place has been getting away with this for years and years and years and years, and now they just happened to have somebody who was possessed. So it's almost like the miracle within the miracle. You know, the miracle that the place is still operating, but you understand that it is because they're a baby factory, and, you know, they flat out say the church doesn't provide much, so we have to provide for ourselves. And that's how they make their money, is that they adopt out these unwanted kids. But then the possession piece of it comes in. And, you know, I mean, there are so many points where with Kathleen O'Brien, that there's so many things like flying around her cell, and she's all, I mean, she has that very stereotypical, and this is maybe where they fucked up a little bit, is that she has that very stereotypical possessed look. Mm-hmm. Where she's like, her eyes are sunken and she's all cut up. And it's like, she catches fire once as they're trying to escort her out of the cell. But at the same time, as the movie goes on and you see more, especially more towards the end, then I get really confused about the possession piece of it. And is the possession piece of it something that's been happening the whole time, and the sisters have been in on it, and they're not exactly honoring their vows, as it were? So it makes for an interesting sort of headspace conversation where you're thinking to yourself, where what's going on, and why are these people doing this? Like, I sort of get it, and then at the same time, I sort of don't.
Yeah.
But then as the statues, you know, we have the original statue of the Virgin Mary who is weeping from the eyes, and that's been a, call it, sign of a miracle slash, you know, perceived stigmata slash whatever for the history of time. But then as all of the statues start doing it, that to me is when the movie got really interesting. And I was just like, kind of just sat back and folded my arms and hang on. I'm like, okay, well, okay, let's go, movies. Just show me what you got to show me and we'll see.
You know, I thought it was interesting to, you know, just the amount of times that, you know, the younger father is woken up in the middle of the night. You know, there's a lot of times when they do the ordeal where it's like the you either hear like child laughter just like right outside of the hallway, or you hear like one of the kids like whispering to him when he's sleeping. Basically, like, trying to warn him or, like, say, like, hey, you're going to die or whatever. But, you know, it's just a constant thing in this movie. Like, even with the statues, like, I thought it was interesting, too. So, you know, we basically went from, like, the weeping of blood initially to, okay, all of them are having the same sort of effect. And then we have, like, the next portion of it where the statues are literally exploding and just getting blown to smithereens at that point. In time. But the focus on Kathleen is interesting in the sense that, you know, here we have someone who obviously not in the best sort of shape. You know, she's scratched up, she's malnourished, she is basically held captive here in the basement. And, you know, we have Mother Superior, who has already really proven to be, you know, wicked woman of the cloth, which, you know, kind of, like, has that sort of, like, ambiguity in regards to, like, what evil might truly exist, you know, like, within the church here. You know, is it, like, Satan's, like, grasp on this chained-up girl in the cellar, or is it really, like, this headmistress who is really, like, holding no sort of, like, sympathy towards these women that are at this institution?
It does beg the question, for me, anyway, that in the midst of doing what you think is good, could you be doing evil? Mm-hmm. And if there was ever a place that more flagrantly represented that, it's the Catholic Church. I mean, it really is. And I'm not, you know, trying to get down on anybody of faith. That's not what I'm doing. One of my best friends is a pastor, for crying out loud. So, but it does beg the question. It's like, when you are so subservient and so single-minded on a single thing, is it possible that while trying to maintain that level of perfection within whatever your anointed religion is it possible that you do some things that are a little bit off the rails? And I think that with this movie, that's one of the things that it goes out of its way to try to prove, is that, yeah, you can be, you know, trying to do the quote-unquote Lord's work, but if the Lord were to come down and go, you know, to audit your work, he might go, wait a minute, something doesn't quite seem right here. And with the, especially with Kathleen, Miss O'Brien, those damn O'Brien girls, I tell you, they're just nothing but a bunch of whores. I think they use her as this sort of vessel for the whole message, you know, and it goes back and forth several times about, you know, she's just this innocent girl. And it's like, oh, but she's with child. Oh, but she has not been violated. And again, a thing from Immaculate, where has not been violated. She's, you know, has her hymen intact. But I think that's when the movie really starts getting kind of weird, as it gets into the possession piece, where before this, with the exception of maybe some of, you know, father, which father was it? Was it Thomas or the other one? What's the other father's name? Father John. Father John hears the voices at night of all these children. And it's like, it sort of plays with you. You know, and you don't really know exactly what's happening. But as you get closer to the end of it, you're like, okay, now I'm kind of starting to see that they're going to mix these two things together. They're going to give you the, yes, there's maybe some, there's an actual possession going on. Oh, but by the way, this place as an institution is also evil. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of doubling down on the evil begets evil thing. And I'll say this now. It makes it interesting. It makes it really compelling to watch. And it makes it really hard to figure out who to hate. And that's kind of the fun part of this movie, is it's like, do I hate the priest whose faith is waning? Do I hate the priest who's like all into the, it's got to be a miracle. But just the guy with all the energy that we all know, who's like in our office or in our work that we hate, who's just like full of piss and vinegar. Or do we hate the mother superior, who is like the bitch mother that we all had? And it's like, I don't even know who to hate now. Mm-hmm. But they do a good job of taking Kathleen and making you sort of focus on her existence and focus on her survival and what's going to happen, because they give you a lot of story about, well, hey, could we do a C-section? And it's like, well, the church doesn't really get down with C-sections. And at the same time, she's going to need a bunch of blood, and nobody here has her type of blood, so it's not going to matter anyway. And you know, and she's not going to survive the birth. And I mean, it's really, they do a good job of putting you at odds with everything that you think, mm-hmm. and making you make a decision.
Right.
And I'm not going to, get down on anybody's decision, but I think different people would choose a different outcome for this. And that's what makes it really fun for me. Cause it's like, I could sit in a room full of my friends and go, so who are you going to pick? And I think if I had five people, they'd pick four different things. But that's where the director here did a great job, is that it forces you to a decision. And there's not a lot of movies that do that. Like they don't make you do that, but this one makes you think about it. And once you've made your decision, at that point, you're just kind of like, you're pulling the bar down and you're strapping in and you're along for the ride and you got to see what happens. And it's really fun. It's really fun, man.
Absolutely. And of course, in this case, you know, the church takes the approach of, if she dies, she dies. You know, like, it's fine. Now, I will say, when it comes to found footage films, of course, I think one of the first things that everyone is going to think of, or at least like one of the complaints that people have with found footage, is camera work in particular. A lot of it kind of like stems from the fact that there is an abundance of shaky camera work being done. Now, thankfully, that is something that is absent from The Devil's Doorway. Because, you know, it was shot on a 16mm camera, and that, of course, helped with that sort of accuracy. That's why we got that sort of, they really followed through with, like, the aesthetics of that camera in particular, including, like, the filters and whatnot in that case. Now, on top of that, with this movie, too, like, there was also just a minimal need for special effects here. Because a lot of times, you know, we are treated to things like, you know, the ghostly laughters, and when it comes to, you know, the children in this institution, we had our bloody handprints. We also had some, you know, claustrophobic inducing underground caves that we were exploring in the third act of the movie, as, you know, I'm sure people were wondering whether or not Frogman was down there when we were watching this on Tuesday, but sadly, he was nowhere to be found. He was probably just off somewhere fucking. But I have to say, at the end of the day, when I look at this movie, you know, there's a lot of good, but there is a little bit of bad. And I'll get into my thoughts on that. Here we have, you know, our director, who really manages to really record, like, this very, like, moody descent into essentially, like, the bowels of hell right inside of God's backyard here in the church. So it really makes monsters of those who, you know, many would otherwise assume are, you know, angelic. Now, on the other hand, it is a little heavy-handed in regards to the use of jump scares. And it doesn't really vary that sort of deviation from the formula in that case. You know, we've got our, you know, nighttime ghouls. We have a lot of the quick pan type of attacks. But in the end, like, when I think about this movie, I, you know, I, you can do far worse with this sort of approach. I think at its core, though, like a lot of the intrigue in how the history and, you know, just the horror element of it and how they collide here is worth the viewing experience alone, though.
It would be pretty simple to put this one in the category of The Exorcist and just put it down 25 notches, right? And just go, eh, and write it off. Now, for me, and because I was super paying attention on my second watch, we have the Mother Superior talk about funding her church, and part of how they fund the church is selling off these babies of these unwed mothers. At the same time, once we get down into what I can only describe as the catacombs, I mean, they're catacombs, let's just call a spade, and you see many, many, many piles of bones that are clearly children. And so what am I to take away from this? Now, are some of these children that died in childbirth? In current times, it's 1960, but let's assume this place has been going for 100 years, right? So 100 years previous, children and mothers dying in childbirth was not a rare thing. It happened. It's still creepy as hell. So just to see it is super unnerving. But there's this piece of me, and the thing I thought when I saw the first infantile set of bones was like, well, they didn't make any money there. Mm-hmm. Like, and but I think that plays into the whole what is actually evil about the place. And I honestly think, well, I'm gonna check that. I honestly thought up until the very end, well, okay, this is one of those places that we all know exists, nobody wants to talk about. They're sort of doing, call it the people's work. And as long as we don't have to hear about it, nobody cares, right? It's just one of those things that happens. The hard part is that there's a point in the movie where Father Thomas says that he was born in an orphanage. Okay? And that is very much in tune with what this is about. It's akin to an orphanage, but it's like one step down, right? Like a way rougher orphanage. And at the very end, one of the nuns, I don't know if it was Mother Superior, one of the other nuns, pops up and says, you know, welcome home, Thomas. And it's like, it sort of makes you wonder, like, if this guy's life came full circle and he came back to the place he was born. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if that's the case, forgive me, but holy shit. Okay. I mean, talk about just bringing everything totally full circle, which is just absolutely awesome. But then at the same time, it does give you this more humanistic approach to evil, where the woman that wrote the letter talking about the miracle in the first place, you know, her body is found down there with its eyes gouged out. And it's like, and they talk about a line from the Bible where if something is, you know, not doing what you want, you're going to cast it out. So, I mean, this movie is evil begets evil begets evil. I mean, it really is. And I think, and especially for a first time director, I think it was superbly executed. And it made a movie that made me want to know more about what was happening. So it made me do research, and it made me do research on nuns. It made me do research on demonic possession. And you and I have talked about this. I watch a ton of horror, just like you do. And when I watch a movie and it makes me want to reach out and go further and know more, that's a really well done movie. And I think this one falls in that category.
Yeah, for me, I think the part of the movie where I'm like, okay, they can go like any number of directions with this. We kind of had the point where, you know, the fathers are basically asking Mother Superior to unchain Kathleen. Or in this moment where it's just like, oh man, like what's gonna happen now? Because obviously, like, she's been down here for quite some time at this point. And part of me was like, in this moment, I was really rooting for Kathleen to just go absolutely ballistic towards Mother Superior. Unfortunately, that did not happen. But, like, that was, like, the one point where it's like, oh, man, like, I don't know. Like, I legitimately did not know what was going to happen. But obviously, like, Mother Superior knew what she was doing. Like, she knew the issues that Kathleen was having. So to, like, have that sort of, like, okay, well, but you don't really know what you're getting yourself into sort of moment was really intriguing to me. But I laugh so hard every time that when we go into the cellar, and like we have a lot of these moments, you know, typical with, you know, possessions, when, you know, we have the crosses falling off of, you know, the walls or turning upside down. And it's like every time we go back, everything is perfectly back to normal, in order, like nothing has ever happened. And it's just like, well, what is, like, the cleanup crew just, like, fixing everything? Like, what's going on here? Because you would think with that sort of, you know, demonic possession going on, that shit would just stay off in that case.
I think that, for this movie, that was the red herring inside the red herring. And I think, you know, it being 1960, I think that was probably the room where they put the truly mentally ill, right? So they didn't hurt anybody. At the same time, when you have an unwed mother who is perceived to be mentally ill, whether possessed or not, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this. The only thing that I think truly gives away whether you're, you know, down with the devil, as it kind of is said, that is the clouded eyes. The clouded eyes are what are the dead giveaway in this whole thing. And there's one time when you see Kathleen with that and you're like, oh wait, okay, so maybe there's more going on than I know. But then when we get to the end of the movie, we're in the catacombs, we see at least two nuns that also have the clouded eyes, and there's a big sort of satanic altar. And you have to wonder, and it makes me wonder, that with these nuns to be truly doing their duty and to truly try to remain holy, that there's, and I think this is something that kind of applies to people every single day, to stay pure and to stay holy, do you have to make a deal with the devil? I mean, and that I think is the question that it asks, and that's what this movie does at the end. I'm not usually a fan of being hit in the face with a sledgehammer, but that's what this does, and I think it does it really, really well, where it's like, okay, so I've given you all these things, and it's like getting to the end, and especially at the very end, you know, when it's like, you know, there's Mother Superior with her clouded eyes saying, welcome home, Thomas. I mean, it's, you know, and then right at the very end, it's like, you know, Thomas dies, and then you just hear Mother Superior just going to a baby, and it's like, I think the overall, like, what is this place and what does it actually do? Like, you have this idea when you start, but then as the movie progresses and you get to the end, you might have a different idea based on, we'll call it, the possession aspect of it. But it doesn't give you an opportunity to really figure it out. Like, you don't, I mean, even getting to the end, it's like, I'm thinking that based on what Mother Superior said, they're probably still an Irish baby factory. They probably really are. There are just times where it doesn't work out exactly as they had intended, and that's what the catacombs are for disposing of the accidents, we'll call it.
Yeah, when it comes to the satanic ritual aspect of this, of course, at one point, too, like, we do have, you know, the fathers during their investigation, basically, like, uncovering, like, this site that is, like, you know, like, a ritual room. And then, you know, they go to confront Mother Superior about it. And, of course, they do the whole ordeal where it's like, oh, that's not actually there. This place is basically making you go mad, sort of ordeal, or it's like playing tricks on your mind, which was interesting. But obviously, like we knew, like that was just basically like a it was alluding to like what's actually going on in the catacombs, because like even in the catacombs we do have that sort of like altar, and you know, of course it's like set up with you know, the blanket where like the sacrifice would happen. In that case, but I have to say, like, all in all, for a movie that it was fairly recent, you know, I know I've seen the poster for this movie probably, you know, 3 or 4 dozen times, and it's just like people kept recommending it to me, and I just, the only thing I knew about it, it was that it was found footage, and like for the longest time that was the reason why it was just on my backlog. You know, because, like, I'm so finicky when it comes to found footage movies, because there are just, as I said, like, very few exceptions when it comes to the sort of standouts. You know, we've seen too many that are so heavy-handed when it comes to that sort of, like, subgenre tropes that go along with it, that it just completely takes me out of the experience, or you're like, well, there's really no reason for them to keep filming, you know, sort of ordeal like you would have in, say, like, you know, Paranormal Activity in some situations. So I have to say, like, I'm so thankful that, you know, we were able to, like, sit down, watch this one, and for it to, like, honestly, like, completely, I'm not going to say, like, it reinvigorated my interest in found footage, but it was, like, I'm glad that this was one that at least makes me more, it makes the genre more approachable, at least moving forward. But, you know, found footage has just always been, like, one of those icks when it comes to, you know, horror movies. So, glad to see one that is an exception to the rule here.
Well, found footage is a double-edged sword, right? It always is. And, you know, I'm going to go all the way back to the Blair Witch Project. Now, I'm one of the few people that think that that movie is overrated as hell. And I understand what it did for the genre. I understand what it did for its predecessors following it. I get all of that, okay? I still think the movie itself is overrated as hell. So I'm right with you when you say found footage, I'm immediately like, ugh, okay. So I will put that on my, I'll get to it eventually. And it's the same as, you know, I'll get to picking up dog shit eventually because it piles up, right? This is one of the rare movies where it is more than worth the watch. And it's so well done. There's so much good story, and but this is also a movie I think that you have to pay attention to. You can't be scrolling your phone. You can't be doing, because you're going to miss things, and you're going to miss things that are really important. So yeah, this is not a movie where you just throw it on and hope that you're going to enjoy it. You've got to focus. And I think maybe that's where this movie has lost a little bit of the audience, is it, because I mean, in people in general today, it's like people don't want to focus on a movie. I mean, people want to watch movies that are for morons. That's what they want, you know. And I don't think that I'm a moron. Maybe I am, with the amount of horror that I watch. Maybe I'm a moron and I don't know it, and I'm content. Don't tell me different, please, because it'll just ruin my whole world. But this one, this movie is not a 10. It's not a 10. But in terms of what it is, what it does, the story that it tells, the twists that it takes you on, and moreover for me, the fact that I walked away from this movie needing to do some research and needing to know some things, and everything from the true signs of demonic possession, needing to know the hierarchy of the Catholic Church and where nuns fall on that hierarchy. It does a superb job. And making me confused but intrigued at the same time, that's a rare thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what you're kind of saying, but I'm going to put a little effort into finding out. That's a good thing when it comes to a horror movie. And I really think that the end of this, when Mother Superior says, "Welcome home, Thomas," I just went, oh, like, because I remember him talking about being from an orphanage, and it was like, there is such a bigger thing happening here, like in this story, than I'm even aware of. And it just made me happy, because I know that probably if I watch this again, I'm going to pick up on a few more things. Because this was only the second watch for me. So if by the second watch I was profoundly impacted, by the third, I'm thinking, like, this is just going to be the bee's knees. So, yeah, while not a 10, not a 5 either. So, I mean, this is something people should watch. But like I said, you need to pay attention. There are so many subtle things in this movie that if you're not paying attention, you're going to think it sucks and you're wrong.
Again, for those that are interested in checking this movie out, it is streaming currently on Shudder. So definitely go check that out. It's worth mentioning, of course, like next week is the start of, well, technically tomorrow is the start of a new month. So we have Farsophobia coming up for April to coincide with April Fool's Day. And of course, Farsophobia is the fear of pranks. And the primary reason why I wanted to do this one isn't just because of, you know, the laughter of the holiday itself, but the use of pranks in horror, specifically when it comes to setting up the villain, is definitely a trope. You know, we've seen it countless times, so there's really no shortage of options when it comes to possible selections that we could have. But I think just about anyone, when they think of pranks, they're of course going to look at the OG April Fool's Day. So that is definitely what we'll be starting with for next month. I'm excited. I already have my other movie picked out, but there's like so much that we can do with this, and I just love it as like the kind of like how everything is just put into place, and then you seeing like, okay, well, like, how are they gonna get back at their classmates, or like, how are they gonna try to you know, seek out their revenge, or just you know, maybe try to reconnect with people just in general.
The original April Fool's Day, I saw it in a theater like 1,000 years ago. I love it. I love the fact that Mamie Steele's in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of can't not. But it's a great movie. It's a great movie. And to your point about like the prank effect, we'll call it, on today's movies. I mean, the fun part is that it's always some muscle-bound douchebag pranking the hot girl, right? And scaring her somehow and doing whatever else. And sometimes her top falls off, sometimes it doesn't. But you know what? That's okay. So I am really looking forward to that. I have not picked out my two movies. Clearly, I'm going to have to make a decision within about 8 days. But I'll try to do it before then. Because April Fool's Day was my first pick, and you took that one.
Well, I figured that would be one that we were both going to have on our shortlist anyway. So it makes
sense
for us to do it.
No, you're right, and that's completely fair. So I'm gonna have to research a little bit and dig a little bit. But I think either way, it's gonna be fun. I don't know, with horror, there's always this weird comedic element that always goes with it. Mm-hmm. And even if it's in the background, it's still always there. And you really can't deny it. So it's the two kind of go hand in hand, unless you're talking about like a hardcore bloody slasher where there's not a lot of fun going on. But even, you know, you go to some of the Friday the 13th, some of the Halloweens, Nightmare on Elm Street, whatever else, there's always a little bit of that kind of ha-ha thing that happens. So I think that makes it fun. So I will make my picks very soon. I will not leave us hanging in the wind. And so I look forward to Tuesday and watching April Fool's Day. And then I think getting to Tuesday, you are going to be in Vegas partying your ass off. So to our loyal crew, go see the Discord because there'll be something happening on Thursday, just so you know.
Yep, absolutely. So the plan for, you know, this upcoming week, you know, we'll be watching April Fool's Day on Tuesday for Twisted Tuesday. Of course, that will be at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. I'll be flying out to Vegas on Wednesday. Hopefully I don't have any sort of delay because I'm pretty sure we're supposed to get snow on Wednesday. So, you know, probably a good time to, you know, leave Chicago. I know it's supposed to basically like rain most of the week leading into basically, you know, the false spring cooling down and then us getting snow on that Wednesday. But looking forward to that. But again, you know, Thursday night at the usual time, Grind will be doing or streaming whatever over in the Discord. So be sure to join him for that. I might try to hop on. We'll see how good the hotel Wi-Fi is. But, you know, worst case scenario, maybe I'll just do something after the fact. But time will tell on that front. But I'm looking forward to, you know, just getting the hell out of Dodge for a bit. But April Fool's Day, you know, the OG is just... I'm looking forward to rewatching it because it's been a while since I've seen it. And, you know, I know our podcast has done original versus remix for quite some time, but like this was one that I was like, I cannot subject myself to doing that because I, when it comes to like remakes, I shouldn't say the two worst ones on my list are April Fool's Day and Prom Night. Because there's a lot of bad ones, but, like, I think those are two that probably are always going to be at the forefront of my mind. But just, like, man, you know, there's definitely been better remakes for some of these more prank-centric horror films out there. But, you know, should be a good month. We've got plenty of options. We got some fun ones coming in, so, you know, be sure to join us throughout the week. But with that being said, since I will be out of town, we're not going to have, like, a new recording for the next week. So, like, you know, April 3rd, we're not going to be recording. We'll basically be recording our first episode, which will be the April Fool's Day one when I get back. So that one will be recording on April 10th. And then I'm assuming we'll probably just end up doing a Sunday recording for that week as well. That's basically just to get you guys caught up to speed on that front. But don't forget, stay connected with us over on social media. We're on Twitter, at Hand With Scare. And of course, join all of our feeds for our watch parties, which are at kick.com/emilydrunk. And you typically do like a pre-show over in the Discord as well on the Tuesdays.
Yes, sir.
Also, join him for that. But with that being said, that will do it for us here tonight on Hand With Scare. Go check out The Devil's Doorway. And, you know, we'll see you guys here in about a week and a half.
And when you get into Vegas, somebody somewhere, probably with high heels and a feather boa, will say, "Welcome home, T."
It is technically my second home because I'm there on the West Coast so often. But yeah. All right, you guys take care.